could even lose his life if the light went out and some ship wrecked on the rocks. He ran out of words and stared at me. I stared back. In the space where our eyes met each other, there was no other thing, no molecule of even air, not ether or electricity.
Then I guess he would have done anything to keep it lit, I said.
Yes. They were almost like lovers, the Keeper and his light. They couldn't exist without each other.
The light passed just over Joseph's head, then mine, then around again in an eternal pulse. He looked the same, which surprised me. Oh, his skin was tougher, as you might expect, and his face was leaner, spare of flesh, the bones fixed in place. But his hair remained thick and dark, brushed the same way. He moved with the same lithe grace. Maybe his shoulders were stockier, I don't know. Maybe he carried more muscle. But the shape, the frame was just as I remembered it, just exactly filled the hole in my memory. His eyes were the same soft, wise brown, only narrower, as if he'd spent most of his time squinting into some bright sun.
"Where did you go?" I asked. "Just checking on Mama. She's asleep."
I reached into the pocket of my dress and pulled out a small strip of white cloth. "Why did you send me this? Why now?"
He glanced at the cloth and then away, out the window, toward Greyfriars. "Because I need your help," he said.
I don't know what I was expecting him to say. I don't even know what I hoped he would say. He was a fugitive. He was going to get caught sometime, that was inevitable. The 1st of October, Frank Santorini had said. Once the summer was over, once the families left, there was nobody to protest if 100 United States Marshals landed on the island in an amphibious invasion. Well, nobody important, anyway. Joseph Vargas had a small, pitiful future, and that future was shorter still if he elected to remain near Winthrop like some kind of homing pigeon, some species of fish that must forever return to the waters in which he was spawned. So why should I think to figure in that non-existent future of his? Of course I didn't. Still, there was that hollow feeling in my stomach, that bitterness I swallowed back in my throat which tasted of disappointment.
"What kind of help?" I asked.
"You know we can't hide you at Greyfriars. They'll certainly see you there."
"Not me."
He turned his head back to me, and his expression, which a moment ago, gazing at me, gazing at him, had been animated with something like hope or longing, anyway, life, had turned dull.
"My mother. She's dying, Miranda."
"Oh, oh."
"It's cancer, I think. She won't see a doctor. She won't leave Fleet Rock."
"Why not?"
"Because she won't, that's all. It doesn't matter why, she just won't. When Pops died, there was no one left to take care of her."
"What about her family? The Medeiros, don't they care?" Joseph moved a few feet away, around the side of the light, and turned his back on me to gaze at the black water outside, the same tiny lights of Long Island I had observed a moment ago.
"They care in their own way, but she won't speak to them."
There was a hoarseness to his voice that hadn't existed before. I wondered if he'd started smoking, a natural thing to do, one presumed, in the state penitentiary, but I couldn't smell cigarettes, fresh or stale. So this additional timber, this low, ragged edge, must constitute some natural evolution that occurred in the years we lived apart. The way my own voice had been shaped and sculpted by Carol, and by various professional dialect specialists. The glow of the light passed across his face, and for the first time I noticed a bump on the bridge of his nose, a scar along his jaw, and yet his hand, pressed against the glass, was so gentle.
"That was why you escaped, wasn't it?" I said.
"For her."
"2 more years before I went up for parole. I couldn't wait that long. She'd be dead by then."
"Oh, Joseph."
"Don't say that. Don't pity me. I made a choice, that's all."
His hand loosened and dropped.
"Anyway, I figured if there was one place in the world I could hide in plain sight, it was Winthrop Island."
To the eternal frustration of Frank and Johnny.
"Frank and Johnny?"
"The two marshals trying to catch you all summer. You do know they were watching the party, don't you?" They might have seen us.
No, they didn't. I made sure to moor outside their line of sight.
You saw them? Joseph glanced over his shoulder with an expression that suggested my question wasn't worthy of an answer.
Frank and Johnny, he said. Nice names.
If they don't catch you tonight, they'll catch you in the autumn, I said. Once the summer's over, they can send as many agents as they want, the Coast Guard. You can't just live here forever.
I'll be gone by autumn.
Where?
Joseph turned and leaned back against the window, crossing his arms. Mama can't last much longer. Not even a week or two. Can't get out of bed anymore. Won't eat anything, not even soup. Wants to starve herself, I think. She just wants to die.
I bent my head and tried to say I was sorry. But how could you say such an inadequate thing? I wasn't sorry. I was something else. I was so full of pity and rage I could hardly breathe.
What will you do?
I asked instead, leaving out the unnecessary end of the question, when she dies.
I'll turn myself back in. Finish my sentence.
There was nowhere to sit except the bed. I crept there and sank on the ancient patchwork quilt.
But they'll extend your sentence. They won't let you out for parole. You might be in for life.
What else was I supposed to do? She's my mother. She hasn't got anyone else.
By her own choice.
It doesn't matter. How doesn't matter. It's just the way it is, Miranda. Some things you have to accept as they are.
I sprang back up. No! No, you don't. You do the opposite. You fight, Joseph, for God's sake. Don't let them win. Isn't that what you told me once? Don't let the bastards keep you down.
I was a kid, Miranda. Anyway, that wasn't what I meant.
Then what did you mean? Was that only about me? Because I'm Miranda Schuyler and you're just some fisherman? Because I've got a right to fight and you don't?
That's got nothing to do with it.
I fought and I fought, Joseph. Every time I got knocked down, I rose again and I kept fighting. And now I'm here and you're here and I don't understand—
Understand what?
Why you won't fight too. Why you never fought for me the way I fought for you when I loved you so— I love you. Joseph turned his back on the sob that escaped me. He braced his hands on the window frame and said,
Because I loved you more.
You didn't answer a single one of my letters, not one.
I kept them, though. I read them a million times. For years, the only thing that kept me sane was you.
Because of the grinding gears, I thought maybe I hadn't heard him. I stood there next to the bed, staring at the back of his head. His broad back in its dark shirt. Camouflage, I guessed. For a man who moved about only in darkness. And then, I said.
And then I had to stop. Turned the corner and started to go crazy thinking about you. There are just some things you can't accept, I guess. And one of them is when the woman you love gets married to somebody else.
Carol.
Don't say his name.
You have no right, I said. What else was I supposed to do?
I know I've got no right, believe me. I wanted you to live. That was the point. But it still ripped my guts out.
I felt sick. I actually shook as I stood there, trying to inhale in slow, deep breaths, the way Carol had shown me to calm my nerves. I said, well, it ripped my guts out, too, being married to him, if that's any consolation.
It's not.
I left him. I left him in April, that's why I came here, so he couldn't find me. Now Joseph straightened and turned.
Why? What did he do to you?
I opened my mouth to tell him about the baby, about Victor's sofa, about the tree on the Bath Road. His raw expression stopped me.
He didn't treat me as I deserved, I said instead. I think it's because he knew I didn't really love him, not the way he wanted to be loved.
It was the right answer, I thought, and also a true one. Joseph relaxed back against the window.
I'm sorry, he said.
Sorry for what?
Because it was my fault. If it weren't for all this, you'd never have met the bastard.
No, I wouldn't. But then I wouldn't have made all those films either. I wouldn't have become what I am.
Yes, you would. You'd have found a way. Anyway, if you ask me, those films weren't worthy of you.
You saw them? He nodded.
Some of them.
They show flicks in prison, you know. I saw Four Roads to Paradise and The Fox. Those weren't my best. Maybe not, but I also saw Shrew.
That wasn't Carol's film.
I noticed. I noticed you were a different woman in that one.
He was so furious. He told me I was selling out, making a film for Americans, for Hollywood, but I wanted... It wasn't just the script, which was wonderful.
What?
I wanted to make a movie you might see. Some way I could speak with you. That was the reason I started acting to begin with.
Not for me.
Yes, for you. What else? I made you a promise, didn't I? Don't you remember? The gears ground and ground. Joseph's face, illuminated in vast pulses by the light, was stricken.
I remember,
he said. And you kept yours. Those roses. There were more than 5 dozen, I counted.
He turned his head and stared out the window. It was a dumb thing to do, I guess.
You might have been caught.
No, not that. There was no point, that's all.
They made me happy. Isn't that enough?
He made a noise in his throat and leaned his palm on the window ledge. The light sent odd shadows streaking across the side of his face. For a moment, we kept vigil, waiting for something to return to us. I remember wondering what he was looking at, wondering what he was thinking, wishing he would turn his head back to me and say something before the tide went slack and the minutes ran out. But he didn't move, and finally I opened my own mouth.
Joseph, can't we just...
He turned then.
So promise me something else.
What?
I need you to promise me. If they happen to catch me before Mama dies...
Don't say that.
But if they do, she's got nobody else. You're the only one I can trust. Everyone else...
He let the sentence fall. My breath came easier now. My hands steadied against my sides. The duskiness of his skin entranced me. I said,
I promise.
Joseph leaned back against the window frame, his head bowed. I started forward, and though the sound of my footsteps was swallowed by the noise of the mechanism, Joseph must have felt my approach. Just before I reached him, he looked up.
Don't touch me, he said.
My hand, which had just risen to find his shoulder, fell back.
Why not?
He made a dry, sad little laugh and stepped away.
I'll bet you can figure that out yourself.
You touched me on the beach,
I said.
Last month, you held me in your arms.
That was different.
He was staring out the window again, but I knew he wasn't looking at anything. I felt the scintillation of his nerves and the scintillation of mine. I moved forward without fear and laid my hand on his back. He flinched and went still.
Just give me one thing in return, I said.
I can't.
Not that.
I slid my hand along his shoulder and came to prop myself on the edge of the window frame exactly to his left. I took his hand and held it in my lap.
Remember what you told me that night? Sailing off around the world?
That was the old dream, Miranda.
Promise me you won't turn yourself in. Promise me you'll take a boat, my boat, Hugh's boat, the one I just bought from the Huxleys, and you'll sail away from Winthrop and never come back. You'll find some island or some village somewhere.
He pulled his hand away.
It's a fantasy.
Promise me.
It's not a promise I can keep, is it?
Yes, you can. It's simple. If they don't catch you before your mother dies, you won't turn yourself in. You'll sail off this island and never come back.
Miranda.
You've served your time. Whatever debt there is, you've paid it. You've suffered, my God.
He started to pull away, and I rose and caught him by the shoulders. I said fiercely,
whatever happened that night, I don't care what it was. You don't deserve to suffer for it anymore. You deserve to live.
It doesn't matter what I deserve or don't deserve.
Damn it all, don't you care? Don't you want to live?
Joseph pulled my fingers from his chest, where they had made fists in his shirt.
I wish I could make you a promise, Miranda, but I can't. I've got nothing to give you. I'm asking you for something, and I can't give anything back.
For some time, we didn't move. We stood there absorbing the points of contact between us. My hands in his hands,
Our gazes laid upon each other. The heat of the room was like a crucible, was like a forge, and just as noisy. I wanted to ask if he could open a window or something, but I couldn't seem to move my lips.
"I'll row you back to Greyfriars,"
he said at last. I roused myself. "You can't. The tide."
"What do you know about tides?"
"I learned how to sail for the devil in the deep blue sea," I told him. He started to smile. I thought about tides, how you might say that everything in life moved according to an eternal ebb and flood, ebb and flood. How famine turned to feast and back again, and dark returned to light, returned to dark. I thought my own tide was turning. I thought, we are in flood again at last. We are bathed in light for this 1 hour. I lifted one hand and touched his cheek. He flinched and drew away, but I pulled him back. "What are you afraid of?" I said. "It's only me."
"I've got nothing. I don't have anything left to give you."
"Yourself."
"It's gone. That's all gone."
"No, it's not. It's still there. You're still there, and I want it. I want you."
"Miranda."
"Joseph, listen to me. I didn't have any letters. I didn't have a photo or one thing from you. All I had was the thought of you. I had the knowledge of you, that you were there, just that you existed." He leaned his face into my hand and closed his eyes. I thought how pale he must be, hiding from the sun. He had been so tanned that summer, almost brown. How I had adored the nut color of his skin, the smooth, young texture of him. All that had changed, too. But this skin was still Joseph's skin, and Joseph lay underneath.
"I don't know how," he said. "I don't know how to touch you anymore."
"Yes, you do."
18 years. 18 years in the fucking pen. You don't know. Things I can't tell you.
Maybe there's things I can't tell you either. We stood without moving. I thought maybe this is enough, just to touch him, to have his waist under my hands, his heart beating a couple of inches away. In the ordinary course of things, I was supposed to forget him, this first love of mine. But I had not, and he had not. Whatever it was that connected us, it still existed. Between my chest and his chest ran some force of understanding, some kind of magnetic current that could not exist without its opposite pole. Joseph said my name. His hands, having left mine, had found their way to my back to rest along my spine. I drew his shirt from his trousers. He pulled the zipper of my dress. The bed was narrow and the room was hot. It was a relief to take off our clothes, a relief to touch Joseph's bare skin. He was lean, my God, too lean. There was a hungry concavity to his belly, and the muscles of his chest and shoulders were hard and compact and useful, not like those of actors, just for show, the muscles I was used to. He shied from my touch, but I made him bear me anyway. I laid my fingers and my lips upon his skin until he got used to the sensation of being felt. What he really wanted was to touch me, but he didn't dare. He stood there trembling until I actually took his hands and brought them to my belly and my breasts. I sat on the edge of the bed, and he knelt to face me. The passing light lit his shoulders and shadowed his face.
"I don't know how to do this,"
he said hoarsely. I put my arms around his neck. "Yes, you do." 9. We lay together afterward in a damp, naked knot upon the sheets. The quilt had long since slipped to the floor. I was thirsty, and Joseph rose to bring water from the sink downstairs. I asked what was the source, and he gave me a strange look and said it was Greyfriars. A well on Greyfriars land piped along the seafloor to Fleet Rock because the water table was too low out here, the rock too deep and solid. The water gave me life, I set down the empty glass and wandered about the room, picking up books and inspecting the lamp, while Joseph lay on the bed and watched me. I loved his avid gaze, his silence. Eventually, he called out to me, and I returned to settle myself against him, my back to his front.
"What if I go with you?" I said. "What if we sail off together?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"Because you have a life. You have your films. You can't go back to being nobody. You have to keep going."
I stared at the mechanism of the lamp before me. "The trouble with acting," I said, "is that the scripts are all written by men."
"So what?"
"So characters only say things, they only do things that the writers think they would do. A woman in a film, she only thinks and speaks and acts the way a man imagines she thinks and speaks and acts."
The light swept above us. The metallic noise of the gears rose and fell and rose again. I smelled the woolen blanket, the heat, the human perspiration. The familiar scent of Joseph's skin, only more intimate now, more thorough.
"Yeah," Joseph said, "I see what you mean. Like in Four Roads to Paradise. He was posing you like a doll. It was like you weren't even a woman. You were some man's fantasy."
"I know."
"And Deep Blue Sea. Don't get me wrong. You made them live and breathe. Only you could have made those girls human. But the only movie that, I don't know, the only role that I really loved you in was Shrew."
"Carol was furious with me taking that role," I said. "Not just because it was a big Hollywood movie. He hates that director. He hated that he took Shakespeare and made it something new. And he especially hates Kate. He hated the way I played her."
"Subversive. You had this rage."
"Yes, I had that rage."
"But wouldn't the same thing happen the other way around? Women writing scripts and directing films? You'd just have men doing things that women think they would do."
"Maybe. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad for a change."
"So do it. Make your own flicks."
I laughed. "Oh, sure, it's that easy."
"None of this was easy, but you did it anyway."
He drew the hair from my temple and laid his fingers along the side of my face.
"One thing's for sure, though. You can't do anything from a sailboat off the coast of Argentina."
"Why can't I?"
"Your face. Everybody knows that face. And maybe nobody's going to rat you out on Winthrop Island, but everywhere else..."
"Then I'd wear a disguise."
"See, I don't want you to wear a disguise. I want you to be just who you are. And you can't be Miranda on a sailboat with Joseph Vargas."
Now I turned in his arms, so we faced each other.
"I disagree. I maintain that I am more Miranda on a sailboat with Joseph than anywhere else in the world."
"That depends on who Miranda is, I guess."
"This," I said, "this is who I am."
He touched his forehead against mine. The cot was so narrow, the edge so close, I thought I might tumble off it if it weren't for Joseph's hand on the small of my back, Joseph's leg gently pinning mine in place.
"How did you do it?" I whispered. "How did you survive, being locked up in that terrible place?"
"I just did. How did you survive being married to that bastard?"
"That was my choice."
"Well, maybe prison was my choice."
"How could you choose prison?"
"Because the alternative was worse. Because I figured nothing in my life could ever be so bad as what happened that night. So I might as well go away somewhere where..."
"Where what?"
"Where nobody knew a thing about me. Where I didn't know anybody. Because nothing hurts more than that. Nothing ever hurts you more than the people you love."
"I would never hurt you."
"Not on purpose," he said quietly.
We were so close on that pillow. Our noses nearly touched. Our lips moved side by side. We were stripped of everything that did not belong to each other. Our clothes, our vanity, our misery, our secrets. There was just warmth and breath and skin. A scent that was not his or mine, but ours. I still remember it, the smell of us that night.
"You didn't answer my question, though," I said. "How you survived?" I don't know, I just did. Kept my head down. Got in a few fights at first. That's how they say hello. But the rage, the tough guys, that's not the worst part of prison. The worst part's the boredom. Boredom makes you hopeless. Makes you insane. Makes you do stupid things. That's what you have to fight. You have to find something to care about again.
Yes. I moved my head, so my face was buried in his neck, and he couldn't see what was in my eyes.
So I read. Read everything I could get my hands on. Taught a few guys a few things. I thought of you and your dad. And I got some of us together to read aloud. All kinds of books.
What else?
Exercise, he said. Exercise keeps you sane. And boats. Taught myself draftsmanship. I must have designed about 100 of them. Racing yachts, mostly.
What did you do with them? The drawings, I mean.
I left them all behind.
I looked up at his chin. How did you do it?
How did I leave the drawings?
No, I mean escape. How did you escape? There was a pause, about the length of a single circuit of the light. I was about to ask him again when he spoke, in a voice that only just rose above the noise of the gears.
It was so damned easy. They trusted me.
He moved his hand in my hair.
They trusted me.
I waited for him to say more, to tell me the specifics, the planning and execution, but he didn't. I said, "That's why you're going to turn yourself back in, isn't it? Because they trusted you."
Just stop talking, all right?
Don't do it, I said. Don't go back. You don't owe them a thing. We've got a sailboat. I bought one for Hugh. It's stocked with food and everything. We can leave whenever we want.
And do what, Miranda?
Your old dream. We'll sail the world.
That was a boy's dream.
Well, what do you dream about now?
Nothing.
Yes, you do. I struggled out of his arms and sat up. What about your drawings? You could start a business building ships. Joseph made a sound of exasperation.
Building ships? Are you kidding me? Where? How? I'm a goddamned fugitive.
Somewhere, anywhere. We'll find a harbor on the other side of the world and settle down together. And you can do what you love.
But you can't. You can't be a movie star on the other side of the world.
I've done that already. I don't need it anymore. I don't want it anymore.
Then what do you want?
I put my hands on either side of his head and bent to kiss him. You. That's all. We'll live in a hut somewhere. I'll pick up a hammer and you'll show me how to build a boat.
Miranda,
we'll make our own paradise. I slid my leg over his hips. He was already aroused. He had been stiff for some time as we lay there against each other, and I watched his expression soften into rapture as I drew him back inside me, so deep as he could reach, so deep as I could take him. For a moment, I held him there, while his hands made fists against the mattress and his head swung back to expose the pulse underneath his jaw. I kissed his throat and his jumping artery and said, "We'll make this.
Jesus, Mary.
Make our own island. Make our own children." Joseph grasped my waist and flipped me on my back. "Lord Almighty," I said.
"You all right?"
"Yes." He took his time, as if we had any of that left. I felt the might of his discipline, the pendulum beat of union, as if there might be no end to us, an infinity of Joseph and Miranda, until somewhere in the middle of that infinity I went straight out of my mind and off this sheer vertical cliff into oblivion. I must have made some kind of howl that caused him to stop and ask again if I was all right. I assured him I was, so he lifted himself high on his palms, threw back his head, arched his back for several long seconds, then crashed against me like a shipwreck, a total loss. And the sexual ecstasy was nothing to that of his weight on mine, his sweat, his emission like a purifying balm on my womb. Our skin touched at every inch, every knob and plane, every junction. There was no part of me that was not married to some part of his. I remember wondering what time it was, whether we had made love for hours, whether it might be dawn. At some point, he rolled us on our sides. This time I faced the metal wall just beneath the windows, lit intermittently by the passage of the light. I loved the messiness of the bed, the wild state of my hair, the wetness between my legs, the chaos. I thought in wonder, Joseph. If they come for you, I said, you have to sail away, even if you leave me behind.
I can't just sail away from you.
You can. You will, because you love me, and that's what I want from you.
You want me to leave you?
I want you to be free. He didn't answer, and I must have fallen asleep because I remember waking at the jump of his body. What's wrong? I asked. He was already out of bed, yanking on his trousers.
It's Mama, he said, and he dove for the hatch in the floor.
I didn't know what to do, whether to rise and dress and follow him, or to stay where I was and wait for some kind of signal, wait for him to return. I looked out the window and saw that it was still the middle of the night, and the tide was reaching its slack. I might now safely depart, but I didn't move. The pillow smelled of Joseph, the sheets. I leaned to the floor and found my dress and the strip of white cloth in one of the pockets. The light was too uncertain for reading, so I just ran my finger along the small, neat black letters over and over, while my nerves strained for news from below. When I couldn't stand the incessant noise of the gears any longer, I pulled the dress over my head and started down the hatch. I banged right into Joseph halfway down the corridor that led to the living quarters. He grabbed my shoulders to steady us both. "What's wrong?" I asked.
"She wants a priest."
"Oh, God, what about a doctor?"
"She won't see a doctor. I'm going back out to the beach. Everyone's still there. The sky's lit like the 4th of July."
"But you can't. They're out there, Frank and Johnny, the marshals."
"They won't notice me in the crowd."
He set me aside and continued down the corridor in long strides until he reached the ladder, and I was astonished at his strength as he hauled himself up like an acrobat. He called,
"Wait there. I'll be right down."
In less than a minute, he dropped back down the ladder, using only his arms. He wore his shoes and his shirt, which he tucked into his trousers as he spoke.
"I need you to stay with her, Miranda. Can you do that?"
"You stay with her. I can go instead."
"No, you'd have to row. You can't sail it, and they'll hear a motor. Miranda, please, stay with her. Stay with her. I'll be back before you know it."
The corridor was dark, and his face was shadowed. When was the last time I saw Joseph Vargas in full daylight? Not since that afternoon on the cliffs 18 summers ago. I was seized with terror that I would never see the sunlight on his face again. I took his arm. "Don't go."
"I should have been with her. Downstairs all alone while you and I, while we... Ah, hell."
"She was not all alone. We were right here. You went to check on her."
"I have to go. I have to go now. Don't argue. I don't have time to argue."
"Is it that bad?"
"I don't know. I'm no fucking doctor. God help me. But she wants a priest," he said in a terrible voice.
He wasn't even looking at me. He was looking at the ceiling, as if he could see God through it, brandishing some thunderbolt because he, Joseph, had been upstairs enjoying sexual intercourse with some woman while his mother lay dying. This woman who stood before him, flushed and unwashed. And he was damned. So what choice did I have? I followed him down the corridor and through the doorway into the living quarters. Ahead, I glimpsed the old sofa, the entrance to the kitchen, but Joseph turned away from these, to the right, up an old staircase that creaked under our feet. The landing was dark and windowless. I grabbed Joseph's hand, and he led me to her room, Mrs. Vargas's bedroom, where the bedside lamp was lit, next to a woman I hardly recognized. Her gray hair was spread across the pillow, brushed and dull, and her face was like a skull's, though her eyes were closed. There was a peculiar smell in the air, not of body fluids, but something else, sour and dreadful. Joseph went to the bed and smoothed the skull's forehead.
"Mama, I've brought someone to sit with you while I fetch the priest."
In the gap beneath Joseph's arm, I saw her eyelids move, and for an instant, as she looked into Joseph's face, she seemed almost human. I could have sworn that her skin smoothed out, that the blood rushed into her face and revived her. I stepped closer as Joseph stepped back.
"Don't go," Mrs. Vargas mumbled.
"I have to go, Mama. You want me to fetch the priest, right?"
"Yes," she burst out.
"Then I'll be right back. Miranda will stay with you."
He dragged a chair next to the bed and turned to me. "What if something happens?" I whispered.
"Then it happens. Done all we can."
But his eyes were glassy with tears. He leaned down and kissed my cheek.
"Thank you."
He was gone so fast, I didn't have time to think of a reply. Not even "you're welcome." I was too stunned. I stood there behind the chair and heard the sound of the door. For an instant, I thought of bolting, going after him. My God, she was like a corpse lying there, and I didn't even know her. The corpse of a stranger. And here I was, some stranger, some strange woman standing in her bedroom, her son's lover, his handprints still fresh on my skin. And she was dying. This was possibly her dying day, her dying hour, and I was all she had. I crept closer and sat quietly in the chair. She lay with her eyes closed. Her hands twitched on the bedclothes. There was just the single lamp, and beneath its light her skin looked too delicate and too papery for life. The sour smell was strong, though the bed was immaculate. I saw the pitcher and glass on the nightstand, and I asked if she wanted some water. She didn't reply. The twitching went on, stilled, and resumed. I thought maybe a prayer would comfort her. I knew the Hail Mary from one of my films. I leaned next to her ear and said it now. "Hail Mary, full of grace, our Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary," her eyelids flew open and settled down again. "Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen." Her lips moved.
"Thank you, Father. I'm not... say it again. Hail Mary, full of grace, our Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus."
Her hand shot from the blanket and scrabbled for mine. I hesitated an instant, looked at her bony witch's hand in horror, and then I was ashamed, and laid her fingers in my palm and closed my other hand over it. She whispered,
"Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. But I'm not... it has been many years since my last confession. I don't know how many."
She spoke slowly, littering pauses between the words, but her voice was remarkably clear. When Carol's mother had died a couple of years ago, at the end of a long decline, I couldn't understand anything she said. Not a word. It was as if her voice had sunk deep into her chest, and her tongue, attached to her shuddering throat, had lost its will and couldn't quite shape itself around the necessary sounds. I squeezed her hand and said,
"The priest will be here soon. Joseph is bringing the priest." "Joseph, my son."
"Yes, he loves you so much. He'll be back soon." Her fingers curled into the back of my hand.
"Not yet."
"No, not yet. Maybe an hour."
"An hour? An hour? We have no time. Bless me, Father.
I'm not..."
"Bless me,"
she shouted, lifting herself from the pillow.
"Father!
I... bless you, my child," I said helplessly.
"Lie back now. You need to rest." "Joseph cannot hear this, Father. You must never tell him."
"Just rest, Mrs. Vargas. You need to rest. Close your eyes."
"I don't need to rest. I need to confess.
Not to me."
"And who else, Father? Who else is there to absolve me?"
She clutched at my hand, lifted herself again, and leaned over and kissed it.
"Hear my confession, please. Grant me absolution in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
She crossed herself. Please stop. I rose from the chair. Please stop.
Father, Father. I'm not the priest. I'm Miranda. Miranda Schuyler.
She shook her head.
Miranda's gone. She's a movie star now. My husband showed me the magazines.
No, I came back. I'm here. It's me. Mrs. Vargas stared at my face, and the strangest feeling overtook me, of being seen but not understood. Maybe it's the light, I thought. Maybe she can't see me.
Please, Father, she said. Please, Father, I don't know why you won't hear my confession. Is it because I haven't been to church since then?
There was something mesmerizing about the way she looked at me, the way she spoke in that pitiful, halting voice that was not quite a whisper. I said, without thinking, staring at her lips, "Since when?" She said,
"Since I killed him."
10. I remember many details about the night of my stepfather's murder, but I can't remember the whole of it put together, if that makes any sense. From the moment I woke up on the sofa until many days later, maybe even a month, my memory is more like a kaleidoscope than a linear cinematic recollection. I remember watching Mrs. Vargas speak on the telephone in her low, calm voice. I remember wondering whom she was speaking to and what she was saying. She turned away, so I couldn't pick out the words. I asked her what had happened. Where was Joseph? Was he okay? And she put down the receiver and said Joseph was just fine. It was my stepfather. He had been injured. Naturally, this confused me. But Mr. Fisher's at Greyfriars, I said. He's gone to bed already. Mrs. Vargas stared at me without expression, holding the telephone receiver to her chest, which was covered by a dressing gown of dark red flannel.
You're mistaken, she said in a flat voice. He's not in bed with his wife. He is here with me.
She then returned the receiver to her ear and turned away, and I rose from the sofa. I think I wanted to find Joseph, to get this terrible misunderstanding cleared up, to steady this quaking world around me, to wake me up if I was dreaming, or having some hallucination, some curious psychological visitation of the moment I heard of my father's death. But Mrs. Vargas snared my arm as I started across the room and shook her head sternly. So I just stood there until Joseph himself appeared through the doorway a minute or two later. The front of his shirt was wet with blood, and so were his hands. He didn't seem to see me. He just looked at his mother and said, in the same flat voice, "He's dead." That's when the memory snaps. Possibly I fainted or something, although I never faint. And other memories appear. The police and Isabel and my mother's screams outside because they wouldn't let her in. The noise from all those motorboats, the Coast Guard, whatever. And also the smell, a peculiar putrid sourness in the air, the smell of death.
11.
An odor I recollected now as I stared at Mrs. Vargas's lips, although I couldn't decide if it originated from inside my own head, in the region of memory, or whether it actually existed, floated in the air, connecting me to that terrible night 18 years ago. I said to her, "This is a grave sin, Mrs. Vargas."
"I can't tell anyone but you, Father. Not my husband, not my son. But Joseph, he will never understand. Only God understands."
I found the chair again. My mouth was dry. I reached for the pitcher with my right hand. Mrs. Vargas still clutched my left and poured a glass of water. A little of it splashed over the edge because my hand was unsteady. I drank a sip or two, and when I looked back at Mrs. Vargas, she had sunk back on her pillow. Her eyelids were drifting shut.
"Why would God understand?" I asked.
"He knows how I suffered."
I picked up the glass and drank again. My heart thumped so hard in my chest. I was almost afraid of my own fear. I wiped a trickle of water from the corner of my mouth.
How did you suffer, my child? You know. You remember how they hated me, my aunt and my cousins. Then when Francisca was killed, and they blamed me for that, too.
But Francisca was your sister. She opened her eyes and looked at me with suspicion.
Francisca was my cousin. I am an orphan, father, don't you remember? An orphan who belongs to nobody.
Of course, but Francisca, what did Francisca do?
Father, please, you remember all this.
It's been so long ago. She died so long ago, right? It was
when the baby came, father. When the baby came and she got in the boat to visit, to kill me, probably. And then God sent the storm to drown her, so she could not reach me and my son.
Why would Francisca want to kill you?
Because I took her husband from her. She would not forgive me because I married her Pascal to give my baby a name. But you know this already, father.
It was so long ago. It was many years ago. Why would you commit such a sin, Mrs. Vargas?
I had no choice, father. I was so young. I was in love with him. I thought we were married. I thought we became man and wife when I lay with him.
With whom? I bent closer. With whom? With Joseph's father?
Don't you know? She whispered. Don't you know? His soul contains a piece of mine. And mine contains a piece of his. We have a son.
Joseph.
Our son, a gift from God. She gave him a daughter. But a man wants a son, don't you think? A man needs a son to carry his blood into eternity. I gave him his son.
Now I rose from the chair and walked to the door, and then to the window. I stared at the shore beyond, the tiny light in the bedroom at Greyfriars, where my mother lay awake.
Father, said Mrs. Vargas.
Yes, my child.
I am already absolved of these sins. You have already absolved me.
Yes.
Tia Maria has not forgiven me. My cousin Laura has not. But I am innocent before God. He's forgiven me.
Holy Mary, I muttered, gripping the windowsill.
Holy Mary, Mother of God. He has made me suffer for these sins. He has made me do penance. When I gave birth to my son, I nearly died.
I turned my head over my shoulder, not quite looking at her, and said, What about Mr. Fisher? He sinned too. He did this to you. What was his penance?
To die, she said simply.
I couldn't hold myself upright any longer. There was nowhere to sit except the bed or the chair, so I went to the chair. Mrs. Vargas had stopped talking. For a moment, I thought she had stopped breathing, but her fingers still made spasms around the edge of the blanket, and I perceived a slight movement at her chest by the shift of the shadows cast by the lamp. Her mouth had fallen open. I wondered what else might come out of it, what new horror. I wanted to know, and I didn't. I couldn't even quite encompass what she had already said. She had killed Hugh Fisher, she said. Or had she? Of course she hadn't. What mother would allow her son to go to prison for a crime she herself had committed? What woman would kill the father of her son? It was impossible. But I had known. I had always known in my heart that Joseph couldn't kill anybody. Could never, ever kill his own father. I hadn't mentioned that fact, the vital clue of Joseph's paternity, to the detectives, because I knew without being told that this fact was not mine to disclose. But I had told the detectives that Joseph was innocent. Over and over I'd insisted that Joseph couldn't kill any man. No, I hadn't seen it happen. No, I hadn't heard anything. No, I had no idea how Hugh Fisher ended up on Fleet Rock that night. I'd fallen asleep on the sofa with Joseph Vargas, and when I woke, Hugh Fisher was mortally wounded. But Joseph could not have inflicted that blow, not willingly. If he had killed Hugh Fisher, it was an accident. I don't know how long I sat there, staring at Mrs. Vargas. She seemed to be asleep, but restless. Her hands kept twitching. She thrashed her head from side to side, as if trying to avoid the blows of a persistent opponent. I went to touch her, to soothe her. God knows why, because I had promised Joseph, I suppose, but she batted me away with peculiar strength. At last I rose and went back to the casement window. I took hold of the handle and forced it open, and the gust of fresh, salty air surprised me. The tide had turned and was rushing fast, a fearsome current. Ahead, Mama's light was still on. I tried to look to the northeast, in the direction of Horseshoe Beach, but even when I stuck my head around the glass and into the open air, the angle was wrong, and all I saw was a faint, blazing glow. The party in full swing. I thought I could smell smoke from the torches, from the bonfires, but maybe that was just my imagination. I heard a noise behind me. I pulled myself in and turned back to the bed. Mrs. Vargas's eyes were open, her eyelids quivering.
"It hurts," she said.
"What hurts?"
"Everything. I need my pills."
"Where are your pills?"
"Joseph has them."
"Joseph will be back soon."
"No,"
she moaned.
"No, you need to absolve me, Father. You need to hear my confession. Why won't you hear me?"
"Because I'm not him. I'm not the priest." I had drawn closer to the bed, and she lifted herself up, groaning in pain, and reached for me.
"Father, please. Are my sins too terrible?"
"I can't hear them, that's all."
"I'm dying, Father. You must give me the sacrament."
I cast another desperate glance out the window. Mrs. Vargas's fingers raked my palm, the back of my hand.
"Bless me, Father. I have sinned. I have sinned. I have not been to confession for many years."
"Why not, Mrs. Vargas? For God's sake, why not? Why haven't you confessed?"
"Because of my son. What if my son heard of it? He would never forgive me."
"But he does know, don't you realize? He went to prison for you." How bewildered her face, her rheumy eyes.
"To prison? You're crazy, Father. He's not in prison. He's right here. He's staying with me. How can he know the truth? I never told him. My God, how could I tell him that I killed his father? Father, listen. Kneel with me."
Her hand was insistent. I thought, she's dying, for God's sake. Give her what she wants. She's dying. She's Joseph's mother, and she's dying. I went down on my knees, on the soft rug underneath the bed.
"Father, I have killed a man, the father of my son. I killed him with a knife, which I held in my two hands."
"God have mercy," I said. "God have mercy."
"He had broken his vow to me. We had made a vow together, and he broke it."
"What vow?"
"He married her. He married her and started a baby in her."
"But he didn't know. He didn't know you were going to have a baby, too."
"No, no, not the first one," she said. "His new wife, Francine, she seduced him. I don't know how. She took him away from me. They went to Europe on his boat. For 2 months they were gone, for the summer, like me, a summer wife. I heard her daughter telling Joseph."
"Her daughter? Miranda?" Mrs. Vargas nodded.
"Her, the movie star. She said to Joseph that her mother was going to have a baby, so I knew what I must do."
"God have mercy," I whispered.
"Then God sent me a sign. Father, it was a sign. I went to my bedroom and looked out the window and saw Hugh Fisher in his boat, rowing to me, rowing to this house. He came inside the back way, the cave, the way he used to visit me,
and he went right upstairs to Joseph's bedroom. So I waited for him there with my knife from the kitchen. God have mercy, God have mercy. Joseph heard the noise and went upstairs, but it was too late. I said to him, there was a fight. Mr. Fisher tried to kill me. And somehow the knife, a terrible accident. But how could I tell him his mother had done murder? It would kill him. God have mercy. Will you absolve me, Father? I can't. I can't.
She made a noise of agony and fell back on the pillow. Her lips moved. She was muttering something. I climbed to my feet, trying not to touch the bed itself, and stumbled to the window and the pure salted air. Outside, a purring noise stretched across the water. I braced my hands on the window frame and searched the black water until I saw it, an old, handsome speedboat, lights ablaze at bow and stern, louder and louder, making a foamy arc through the current toward the Fleet Rock dock. 12. By the time I ran down the stairs and out the door, the boat's engine had already slowed to a putter as it eased into place against the dock. In the darkness, I couldn't see who was aboard. I called out, and Isabel answered,
"Here comes the rope!"
The white line snaked through the beam of the bow light. I caught it at the last instant and hauled it tight around one of the rotting bollards. There was a clatter of feet, and Isabel's voice again,
"Come on, Father, I'll help you out."
I didn't dare ask about Joseph. I moved forward and reached out my arm, while the priest grabbed hold of us both, Isabel on the left and me on the right, and heaved himself out of the boat, dragging a thick, unmistakable atmosphere of Scotch whiskey in his wake.
"Whose boat?" I asked.
"Donnelly's. He let us borrow it."
"What about—"
"Not now," she snapped. "Where is she?"
"Upstairs in her room. I'll show you." The priest said,
"How is the poor girl?"
"Not well, I'm afraid." We were already starting down the dock, Isabel and I, half running. The priest made some noise of protest. I turned and saw his white hair, his large frame unrecognizable in a Hawaiian shirt and secular trousers, like any other fellow enjoying himself at Horseshoe Beach that evening. Tom Donnelly's end-of-the-year bash, his gift to the island. I went back and took the priest's arm. "I'm sorry," I said. "I'm afraid I don't know your name."
"McManus," he said.
"She's been asking for you. She has something she needs to confess." He spoke with remarkable precision. Remarkable, I mean, when you considered his state of inebriation.
"I imagine she does. It's been 18 years since I last took that poor girl's confession."
"You know, she's hardly a girl anymore."
"She was. We were all young, Miss Schuyler."
I didn't ask how he knew my name. I didn't know if this was the same man who had blessed the fishing boats 18 years ago, now older and fatter and drunker, or somebody else. Mrs. Vargas spoke of him as if she'd known him forever, but Mrs. Vargas was dying. She'd said a lot of things that made no sense, and how could you pick out what was truth and what was confusion? Ahead of us, Isabel held open the door. The lights in the living room were dark. All the lights were off except for the upstairs hallway and the lamp in Mrs. Vargas's bedroom, and I couldn't see her face, but I felt her impatience. I felt my own boiling beneath my skin. But you can't hurry an elderly, portly priest, a man of God, thoroughly drunk. You can only hold his arm firmly and help him along the rickety wooden boards and up the stone steps, wondering how the hell he managed to keep himself from falling out of Tom Donnelly's speedboat for the entirety of the half-mile run between Horseshoe Beach and Fleet Rock. We reached the door. Isabel allowed us past and closed the door behind us. The bang made me jump. I didn't look at the furniture as we hurried across the living room to the stairs. I didn't see the sofa or the table with the photographs. I stepped off the rug and over the place where Mrs. Vargas had dropped her tray full of porcelain, where those drops of blood had fallen to the stone. We climbed the stairs one by one, Isabel trailing behind in case Father McManus missed a step or lost his balance altogether. Already my shoulder strained, my arm strained under his weight. When we found the landing, I panicked. I thought maybe she was already dead. I had left Mrs. Vargas to die alone when I had promised Joseph to stay with her. I hauled poor Father McManus down the short hall and through the doorway, into the lamplit bedroom, Mrs. Vargas's deathbed, her confessional. Greyfriars framed neatly in the